Forever Dog.
They write, they talk, and talk about what they write. Tune in tonight, or whenever the time is right. It's the Writers Panel with Ben Blacker, and it's starting now. Oh yeah!
All right, welcome to the show. This is how we start a podcast. You think after 500 of these, I would know how to do this? What I'm going to do first is ask you to each introduce yourselves, please, and let the listener know somewhere they may have seen your name on their television screen. And Jamie, let's start with you.
Hi, I'm Jamie O'Brien. I have worked on shows like Hell on Wheels and Fear the Walking Dead season 3, and most recently Nosferatu on AMC.
Great. And Cindy?
Hi, I'm Cindy Fang. I got my start in kids programming on Disney Channel, and I did the CBS adaptation of Rush Hour. Then I did Fresh Off the Boat for a few seasons, and I most recently worked on Young Rock for NBC, which is due to come out sometime this year, fingers crossed.
Sure. I'd like to start, if we could, by talking about what you are both doing right now, because I think it's interesting. And I think, you know, like so many of us, you're both working on a show and working on your own stuff, maybe for someone else. But like, I feel like it doesn't get talked about how much we tend to have to take on at any given time, even when we have a regular job. So can you tell us a little bit about that, as much as you can talk about what you're working on now? I know some stuff was announced for both of you in the past like 6 months or so. So maybe that's a good jumping off point. And whoever wants to start.
Go ahead, Jamie.
Okay. Right now, I'm currently working on the second season of a show called Industry. That's the first season is on HBO. You can stream it on HBO Max. We're working on season 2.
And so, when did you start on this? And then, what else are you up to?
it's. When did I start on this? I started before the break, I started before the holiday break. So I want to say maybe back in November, maybe I started working with these guys, the two creators on Industry. I've also been consulting a little bit on In Treatment, which is also on HBO. They're rebooting it. There's another, I may be saying the wrong thing. I don't know if they're calling it a reboot or a season 4 or what it is, but it's great and really exciting. I haven't been writing for that at all, but I've been kind of consulting, and it's been really a lot of fun. And then kind of on top of that, I'm just trying to, you know, develop, which is fun too.
You know, you're in a room on a show, you're consulting on another show, you're developing as well. Like, how are you managing your time? That's really what I want to talk about. Like, how are you avoiding getting burnt out?
You know, I have found that 2020 was really exhausting. And so far this year is pretty exhausting too. You know, I just think that like, Everybody is going through so very, very much. There's a lot of anxiety in the world. If you are working, I think you're really, really lucky. So I'm counting my blessings on that in that regard. At the same time, it's also like there's so much anxiety in the world and so much anxiety right now also in Hollywood that I'm trying really hard to just... I don't want to say manage expectations because that implies that you're not working hard. Everybody, I think, is working really hard. But for me, it's a lot about trying to manage anxiety and trying to make sure to get enough rest. And, you know, a habit that I got into when I was running Nosferatu was that I would just work around the clock. And I think that I'm trying to avoid that. So I'm trying to hike and I'm trying to sleep. And And then beyond that, just, you know, doing as much as best as I can as the take it day by day.
Yeah, I think getting exercise and sleeping are both really good pieces of advice for both managing anxiety and managing, you know, your day. Cindy, let's talk about what you are up to these days. You know, what is the past sort of post-holiday few weeks looked like for you?
Well, I've been working on some development. I have something set up at CBS TV Studios, and I feel like at all times I have a lot of irons in the fire, just projects that are in various stages of nothing and not really worth talking about, you know, but so there's a lot of that stuff going on. And been trying to actually, the last few years, I've just been so kind of consumed with TV work that I haven't really had time to sit down and write a feature, which is something I've really wanted to do. And so I've been trying to use this time to get something written in that regard.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I mean, I had a similar thing where, like, I was faced with having this time, especially last year. And like, this is a great opportunity. And my partner and I wrote a couple of features. Neither of us has kids. Mm-hmm. And we weren't in rooms at the time. That was not the case for you. So tell me a little bit about just like managing your workload and what the writing process has looked for you as you go forward without leaving your house.
Yeah. Well, I have to be very regimented with my time. And I also have to be, I have to kind of like give myself some flexibility to maybe not be as productive as I wish I could be. Because I think that this is what happens in parenting all the time. It's like when daycare shut down and suddenly your kids are at home or they get a little sniffle. And now with all the new protocols, you know, they can't go back until they're symptom free for 72 hours, you know, that like that happened to my littlest one and he was at home for a whole week. And it's just like, okay, well, there's this constant battle where I get really frustrated, but then I'm also like, okay, I don't need to be so hard on myself. Like the world is what it is now and we're all trying to get through it. And, you know, thank God my kids are actually still healthy and doing well and thriving and they like being around me right now. I mean, who knows what's going to happen 10 years from now. They're going to like probably fucking hate me. And so I'm just like, okay, like just cherish this time, you know? But honestly, a lot of my writing time happens during the day when they're in preschool or after 8:30 p.m. when they are in bed. And so, I mean, I don't know how it is for you guys, but once I start writing, you know, it takes a while to ramp up. And then you're in this headspace where suddenly it's midnight and I'm like, I was tired, but now my mind is racing and I can't fall asleep. And then I'm up, I'm like lying in bed for an hour until I can finally fall asleep. And then it's like, I wake up at 6 a.m. and it's terrible. So I don't know. I don't have it figured out, but.
No, but, and it is sort of like, it's an ongoing process, right? Like every week is different. Every project is different. You know, I feel like this is something we're sort of all always working on. And so I'm always interested to hear best practices. I don't usually talk about stuff I'm working on this, but honestly, I need sort of a kick in the ass. So I'm going to ask you both this. I'm trying to get done the second draft of a new pilot. And it's killing me. Like I'm finding myself like just staring at the computer, not liking anything I'm putting down. You know, I have great notes from both my writing partner and some other folks, but getting into that headspace that you're talking about, Cindy, getting into that zone, the ramp up is not quite happening. I know what I want this thing to look like, but I'm not able to get there. Help?
You know, I think, again, this is kind of like, there's this pressure right now. And, you know, I'm certainly not the first person to say this, but there's this pressure right now to be super productive at the same time that we are literally facing like trauma after trauma after trauma and like, you know, reckoning after reckoning. And I think it's okay. What I'm trying to do is be like, it's okay to do less than you want to be doing, actually. Because for me, and I don't know if you guys experience this, but the anxiety of I'm not doing enough, compounded with the anxiety of just facing the blank page, compounded with like, it doesn't actually help me be productive. So I guess like, it's okay to slow down. I think for me, really these days, it really is about like slowing down, digging in, and it, you don't have to work so quickly, you know? And then, you know, the other advice that I try to give myself, I don't know, again, like I'm kind of a terrified writer. So I try to allow myself to write, just start and let go of outcome, you know, and just start noodling around in there and then give yourself permission to write shitty stuff and to not write a lot of stuff. And then I think, I don't know, again, like if you just take a lot of pressure off yourself, for me, that's helpful.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. I would also add like, I would also add that sometimes this is where like having a lot of irons in the fire type of mentality can help, because when I get sick of one project, I just switch gears and I just go to something else, you know? And sometimes it's just like, you need to walk away from something in order to get clarity on it. I've just found that to be the case for me.
Yeah, I think that's really true. Have you, either of you found like, it's easier when we're in a room, right? You're around creative people all day. You have certain tasks that you have to get to. In development though, have you found ways to sort of kickstart that zone that you have to get into?
If you're in development on something that has sort of moved through the pipeline, and like, for instance, you have producers on it, that can help you stay on track. Mm-hmm. If you're sort of like developing something completely on spec, that takes probably more discipline. And something that I do for that is like, I'll form a writer's group. And I think that's kind of good practice no matter what stage of writing you're in. Like I'm in a writer's group right now to help me finish this feature that I've been working on. And it's just like something that I do when it's helpful to me. So like when I was pregnant with my second kid, I was like, I want to write a new pilot and I need to have this written before I push this baby out. So I formed a writer's group and I finished a pilot like literally the week before I had to go to the hospital. And then I felt better. I was like, cause I like you, Jamie, like, I'm a terrified writer and I'm just like, I need to have something, you know,
chasing
something
you.
Ready to go. Yeah. So for me, that was like the deadline. And then to have sort of like a group of people, like-minded people who are going to push you to meet that goal, is just like super helpful.
Yeah.
Really, yeah. I think that's really smart. I try to just break it down into little tasks. Do you know what I mean? I get a lot of pleasure out of checking things off. And so I find that yes. gives me a kind of momentum. So if it's just like, and I'll literally break it down sometimes into, you know, make a folder for this new project, do X research for this project. Like I'll kind of dip my toe in and then I'll be like, you know, I break it down into the tiniest tasks possible so that then I can do this and feel like, oh, I know how to be a writer. And then that kind of helps me get over the terror.
Yeah, there's something to accomplishing stuff, no matter how small, that you build the momentum, right? I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about some of that early stuff that you both worked on. And I think both of you really successfully have made a transition from one kind of TV to another. And like Cindy, you mentioned starting out in kid stuff, although it was high quality kid stuff, you know, Ant Farm and Little Meets World. Those are good shows. And Jamie, it seems like you started out on a lot of like networky sort of some procedural shows. And I want to talk about moving towards stuff that presumably you wanted to be doing more. I assume you both like the stuff you're doing now. So walk me through that a little bit. And let's just start with like, I hate doing origin stories because I feel like they're rarely instructive to new writers, but there are always commonalities too. There is stuff that you can take from those stories. So let's start with that. I mean, Jamie, what was the first show? What was the first writing you got paid for?
The first writing I got paid for, I think, was I co-wrote a freelance episode of Close to Home, which was a CBS procedural where I was the writer's assistant. I was actually, I was one of two writer's assistants, and the two of us, the other one was a woman named Terry Huggins, and the two of us co-wrote a freelance episode together. So that was kind of like my first ever TV job. And I thought would be like, I was like, I've written an episode of television. I'm all set. My career has begun. then of course the show got canceled and I was a writer's assistant again on, Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles was the next show that I worked on. I was a writer's assistant. It was a fantastic show. I did not have the opportunity to write a freelance episode there, but while I was there, the writer's strike happened actually. And, that gave me time off, during which I finally wrote a spec that was a useful sample. And then that got me my first like staff job, which was on a show called Lie to Me with Tim Roth. That was also a network show. And I
want to dig in on some of this stuff. So during that strike, you say you wrote a spec that was useful to you. What kind of material did you have before? How were people seeing you before, and what made this one different?
I started as I started off in the theater, and I went to drama school. I went to Yale Drama for playwriting, and when I graduated in 2004. Some of my classmates kind of got TV writing jobs like right out of school, and they were like the first playwrights who became TV writers that I knew about. And so I started off with one of them was my class. I was classmates with a writer named Roland Jones, and he had written a play called The Intelligent Design of Jenny Chow that was nominated for a Pulitzer. And he used that as a sample to break into TV and started working on Weeds. So I came to Hollywood. I worked for his literary manager, and was like, you should rep me. I also am a playwright from Yale. And he was like, you haven't written a Pulitzer nominated play though, so you should write a TV spec. This was back when people were still specing television shows. And I, for whatever, I just like didn't do it for a really long time. I think probably again, it was the terror that kept me from doing it. So I didn't really have a workable sample because my plays were not great samples. And it wasn't until I actually broke in with having written a spec. I wrote a spec of a show called Rescue Me that was on at the time. And so I wasn't, even though I thought of myself as like a playwright, I kind of entered the television world as a writer's assistant, like nuts and bolts TV person. But I had an agent and a manager who I was like, I kind of always wanted to be writing for cable TV. So which they were aware of. And we kind of like, after I got a foot in the door, we're able to kind of go over to, excuse me, Big Love was my first cable show.
Gotcha. So what was, and then we'll, move on, but what was that spec that they were able to show, like, this is where she should be?
It was a Rescue Me spec, which was it was an FX show. So it was, it's a character driven cable show. So it was So that helped. It helped me get my first, it helped me actually do it, like, it helped me get my first job. And then it kind of helped me, I think, although actually now that I'm talking about it, I think that the Big Love folks read one of my plays, Mark and Will. But it's like, they wouldn't read the play until I, like, I don't know. It's like, it just goes to show you, like, it was the same sample that I had had before, but people weren't trusting it. And then kind of after I got my first job, then it was like, oh, then they trusted that sample a little bit better, I guess.
Yeah. They look at you as a total in a different way. That's interesting. Or you're being presented in a different way.
Yeah.
I want to pick up there in a second, but Cindy, what was the first thing you got paid for, the first writing?
So my first credit was for a Disney Channel show called Ant Farm. And I got staffed on that job because I got into the Disney TV writing program. And the way that that program worked, at least at the time, was... You have to apply, and it's pretty competitive. And then they select a group of fellows that they retain for a year. They're salaried by Disney corporate, and they try to staff you on something within the Disney family, whether it's Disney Channel or Freeform or Big ABC. And because I went in as a comedy writer, and the program starts at the beginning of the year. And for people who don't know, you know, network staffing season usually doesn't happen till like April, May. And so the needs that first arise are for Disney Channel, because that kind of staffs year round. And so like 2 weeks into the program starting, I got staffed on Ant Farm. And so I did that. And when the fellowship was over, they brought me back for their third season. So I did two seasons on that. And then, after that, kind of it just, you know, the ball just kept going. So.
Yeah. Did it feel to you like the fellowship had properly prepared you for what was expected of you on Ant Farm?
Yes and no. What's hard is, like, I think, you know, I went to film school too. And as much as people try to prepare you for something, it's like, you can't ever really know until you're in it. It's like the same thing with like becoming a mom, you know, you have this fear of like going through the labor, and you just have no idea what it's going to be like until you actually do it. And then it's like all the things that people say, you're never going to sleep again. Like kiss goodbye to your freedom. It's like, you just don't know. And then you're there and you're like, oh shit, they were right. But whatever, you know, you just, I mean, they tried to prepare you. They would bring in alums to talk about their experiences and try to give you advice. But actually what that had the effect of doing, in all honesty, was just freaking me out. And it was like my first staffing job, you know? And also I was not a writer's assistant or a writer's PA. I'd like never worked in TV before. I didn't even really have like a true industry type job. Like I didn't work at an agency or anything like that. So for me, it was my first time in a writer's room in that setting. I was very nervous. And I sort of had it drilled into me, whether this was a combination of the advice I was given or also my fear exacerbating this advice, I basically just like did not talk. I mean, I talked, but it was like, I was just so self-conscious and just never wanted to say anything. I almost felt like, you know, you get staffed and you're like, yeah, you're a staff writer, but you kind of feel like I'm a little bit lower than a staff writer, you know, because I like came from this program. And so I was just always very cognizant of like where I was on the hierarchy and just constantly afraid I was going to say something stupid, you know what I mean? That's not a great way to start out, but I was just like being honest about like how I felt at the time.
Yeah. And that's honestly, that's universal. I mean, like whatever anyone's reasons for feeling that way, I think when we are first thrown into that room, whether it's your first job or your third job, but any of those early jobs, like, that's how it feels.
I'm scared every single time. Yeah. Like, truthfully, like every single time I start a new show, I'm terrified. And I, Yeah. Like I was working on a script for industry last week and I was, so like paralyzed with fear.
Which part is scary for you?
All of it. I mean, you want to do a good job, right? You feel so lucky to be there. And you feel like, you know, thank God, like I spent so many years waiting tables and, you know, like love to everybody who's waiting tables. I am so glad to not be doing it anymore. So there's a terror about having to go back to it. And it's just, I mean, literally it is a high pressure environment where everybody is working so hard. You don't want to let anyone down. It's like, if your draft doesn't come in, that means other people have to fix it. Like if you're, you know what I mean? Like, so there is a sense of like wanting to, not wanting to make people's difficult lives more difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. You put that pressure on yourself, but also that pressure is real.
Yeah.
How do you get through it? I ask this of both of you. And Cindy, if you still get those first day of school feelings at new jobs, you know, for both of you, how do you push through that and do the work?
There were some anxiety medications involved. But I mean, honestly, now I just feel like I'm in a different place than where I was starting out, because in the beginning, because I was so green and that was my first exposure in the writer's room. So everything had been built up. Like I didn't know anything, you know, and then over time, the more shows you work on, the more people you meet, you sort of get a better picture of like, you know, how it's supposed to go. You know what I mean? So I just feel like, and also I'm fortunate in that I'm kind of in this position where I've worked with a lot of the same people now, you know, for the last few years. So there's then a level of comfort in that. And, you know, that's obviously not always the case, but I think that I've also just learned like, okay, sometimes I'm going to say something and it's not going to stick, but sometimes I'm going to say something and it's going to be good. And that's called pitching. You know, it happens to everybody. Like showrunners will pitch stuff and it doesn't land. You know what I mean? So that I sort of had to take a step back and be like, it's not just me. You know what I mean? You have to tell yourself that all the time.
Yeah, for sure. Jamie, what about you? I mean, you started a job a couple months ago. You had been working on a new show and then carried through with that new show a couple of years ago. Is starting over each time difficult? Does the curve become, you know, shorter for you?
It's scary every time. It really is scary every time. I guess that like, you know, I'm going to butcher this, but I once heard Sean Ryan speaking about story breaking. And he said something like, breaking the story doesn't get easier. It's always hard. But what does get easier is you start to trust that it will be broken. Do you know what I mean? So it's not that like the journey itself gets shorter, but you start to have faith that it will at least occur. and I don't know, there's some kind of comfort in that. And then it's like, you know, you got to do it. You have to like, literally you have to walk in and do it. You have to show up on the first day. So, there is a monster chasing you, and that you have to kind of keep ahead of. And, you know, it's like anything else for me. And I it's like, once you start it, for me, the terror is it's always the beginning. And then it's like, once you're in it, because you are forced to be, then you find a groove.
Yeah, absolutely. It totally makes sense. Like just doing it makes all the difference, right?
Yeah. And it's like, it's such an easy thing to say, just do it. Everybody says it, but it's like, and it's so simple and it really is the only way through. And yet it's so hard sometimes, but.
Let's talk about good rooms that you've each been in. Like what have been best practices that you will take to running your own shows? What have you learned from great showrunners or great, you know, coworkers?
Well, For me, a big one is keeping good hours. I think we've all been in rooms that had not great hours, maybe even weekend hours. And I just don't think that that is healthy, you know? I've found that, you know, when people are able to have lives outside of work, they actually are more productive and bring in funny stories. And, you know, there's also just like a certain point where it's like, you know, diminishing returns, right? It's like, are we really going to come up with a better blow at 1 a.m. than, you know, if we just called it at 6 p.m. and just came back fresh the next morning, right? So if I am ever lucky enough to be in a position to run a show, that is definitely something that I would strive for.
Yeah, you know, I feel really lucky. I've worked for a lot of great showrunners. I would echo, like, I think that decent hours are always good, like, for morale. And I agree, people are just more productive. You know, I think kindness, respect, and clarity really go a long, long way. It's really hard work. And so, like, showrunners who model respectful, kind behavior, I think are, I mean, it's just easier to work for folks like that, right? And then if there is a night that they need you to work until 10 p.m. or something like that, which hopefully is rare, then you're more willing to do it. You know, I like the feeling of everyone being in it together. And yeah, those are my favorite rooms to work for or to work in. And, you know, that's what I hope that I try to do when I run shows, or when I ran Nosferatu, certainly. And,
Was Nosferatu your first showrunning gig?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was that, did you meet that with a whole set of, was it a different kind of terror you approached that with?
Yeah. I mean, and I guess I would echo what Cindy was saying earlier. Like, I feel like I had worked in television for a long time prior to that. I had been a co-EP. I had run writer's rooms. I had done a lot. And so I thought, I know what this, like, I thought I knew what it was. And it was, it was both what I thought it would be, and there were challenges that I could have foreseen, and it was what everybody said, but also I felt it in a new way. And it's the most challenging and rewarding job that I've ever done. I loved it. And it's also like, it takes every single like thing of you, like everything, and any kind of like weakness in your personality, it will expose, you know what I mean? But it's also a lot of fun. So like, in other words, like if you're a people pleaser, that's going to get challenged. You know what I mean? Like if you're like, I want everyone to get along, that's going to get challenged. That stuff is hard for me anyway.
What I'll ask sort of the reciprocal question of, to both of you, like in these rooms you've been in, are there things that you've looked at and said, like, that works for this show maybe, or for this showrunner, but I wouldn't do it that way?
I'm sure lots of times, you know, I think lots of times we've gone with like story things that wouldn't be what I would do. You know, and like looking back on it, like, what do I know? But I take the view whenever I'm working on a staff that it's my job to, if you have a good showrunner who, and a good like creator showrunner who are able to tell you, this is what the show is. And you know, I think that can evolve. And, but as long as I view when I'm on a staff, it's my job to make their show. So I try to release any kind of ego off of it. And it's like, you know, like you said, some pitches land and some don't. And when you're in that seat, it's your job to make those choices. And when you're not, it's not. You just got to roll with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I 100% agree with that.
For for people who want to do this job, for, you know, folks who are, you know, 20 years old and trying to break in, what would you tell them are the biggest challenges to writing for TV?
Yeah, I think that something, and I think this is sort of playing out differently now that we're sort of in this world of Zoom rooms and stuff, but just like office politics and stuff can sometimes be tricky. And that it's, you know, it's, yeah, it just can be a tricky situation. And as much as possible, just stay out of it, you know?
That's a good piece of advice that, like, is something we don't often think about, because we think about, like, we're going to this creative endeavor, but it's still an office. It works in a lot of the same ways that a corporate office does.
And also, it's like people, you know, you can try to check your ego, but people, the truth is, we all have one, right? And so it's like, yeah, it rears its head in lots of ways, even among wonderful people, you know? So I think it's really smart if you can avoid it to avoid it. And also I would say, be gracious and learn from those above you. And when you are tasked with rewriting, do the rewrite. I've worked with, you know, sometimes it's hard to do. It's hard, especially when you're a young writer and you've poured yourself into a script and you get a lot of notes, which you will. I feel like I've seen some young writers kind of remain possessive and not really dig in and do the rewrite. And I think that that's less helpful in a million different ways than to think hard, take the notes to heart, ask for help, be gracious about help, be gracious about being rewritten, try to learn from being rewritten. You know, I always tell people every single television script that I ever wrote was rewritten top to bottom until I was in like my third year of Hell on Wheels. And it's normal, and you can either let it crush you, or you can like learn from it, you know, and carry on. So my advice is don't
that's
be crushed.
Good advice. I always feel like if I don't get notes, that this is probably how like fucked up my mind works. I'm like, if I don't get notes, you're trying to sabotage me because you don't want my script to be better. You know what I mean?
I so had a showrunner tell me one time, if the network doesn't give you notes on a script, your show is canceled.
Right. It's like they're not invested anymore. They don't want to, like, what's the point of even giving you notes? It's not going to get there. So I was like, please give me notes. But, you know, you want them to be actionable notes, not like vague, unhelpful notes, obviously.
Yeah, I think that's very good advice. And I think there's a lot to take from this this chat. Thank you both so much. We'll end as we always do by asking you what you are watching on television these days. What's getting you excited or inspired? What are you talking about with your friends, your loved ones, your coworkers? And Jamie, let's start with you.
I have been watching Pretend It's a City on Netflix, which is Martin Scorsese interviewing Fran Lebowitz. And it's, you know, the truth is I wasn't super familiar with her work before I saw this. And just seeing these two old New Yorkers enjoying one another's company, talking about New York and walking around New York has felt like comfort food for me. It's made me feel, I haven't lived in New York in a long time, but it's made me remember it and love it and feel a sense of nostalgia for it.
That's awesome. I'm going to check that out.
Cindy, what are you watching?
I am caught up in the Bridgerton obsession. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. So I'm going to be very sad once it's all wrapped up, but I think I just have a thing for these period shows. 'Cause before that I watched The Great on Hulu and I love that writer so much. It's, a fantastic show. So yeah.
Yeah, a lot of fun. I've seen like the first couple episodes and then kind of got like, I was writing, so I fell off, but it's addictive. You feel yourself being like, I should be writing, but I'll watch one more.
Yeah.
That's a good show. Thank you both so much. I really appreciate you talking today. Please come talk to us anytime. I think people will love it.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much. Nice to meet you guys.
Forever Dog. This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.